My talk is going to, in a sense, address that third final comment you made about disseminating information to those who need this information. I don't have any disclosures or conflicts of interest, but I do need to tell you that the content of my presentation and the opinions expressed don't necessarily represent those of the US EPA or its policy, and any mention of trade names is not intended to be an endorsement. I think many of you all know that cardiovascular disease is the number one killer of American men and women, and it accounts for over 800,000 deaths annually in our country, one every 39 seconds. And it's responsible for 17% of our total healthcare expenditures, and that's expected to triple over the next 20 years. Aged adults carry a disproportionate burden of cardiovascular disease, morbidity, and death. Shown on this slide is an important American Heart Association scientific statement titled Particulate Matter, Air Pollution, and Cardiovascular Disease. Dr. Wallace did a great job in explaining what particulate matter is, and I'm not going to review that here. This was published in 2010 and summarizes epidemiologic controlled human studies, basic research related to health effects of ambient particulate matter that was largely discovered over the last decade. The conclusions of the expert panel is that at a population level, and you know, I quote here, the overall evidence is consistent with a causal relationship between PM2.5 exposure and cardiovascular morbidity and mortality. But not everyone in the United States has the same risk to the adverse health effects of particulate matter over the short term. So who is at high risk? And who should be most concerned? Well, people with coronary heart disease, and those that would be heart failure, excuse me, or serious ventricular arrhythmia, and possibly people with diabetes or advanced lung disease, are those who would appear to be at highest risk. As shown on this slide, the prevalence of coronary heart disease and heart failure, that is those with a history of heart attacks, angina, or ischemic chest pain, are strongly tied to advancing age. And together, this group numbers about 20 million people in the United States. To look just at one particular age group, among people over 80, 36% of men and 21% of women have coronary heart disease, and these are expected to be at high risk. So these are the people who are at greatest risk from air pollution exposure. Now, this slide will be particularly interesting to Dr. Wallace, Peggy, and Jasmine, because this slide shows the estimated excess mortality attributed to both PM2.5 and ozone by county in the United States based on 2005 air pollution levels. The map illustrates the opportunity to positively impact public health through compliance with air quality standards, as well as actions individuals at high risk can take to decrease their exposure and risk. Instructing people who are at high risk on how to modify their exposure and lower their risk is an educational activity that healthcare providers and public health officials should consider. The scientific statement from the American Heart Association goes on to make three additional key points. First, that PM is a modifiable risk factor that contributes to cardiovascular morbidity and mortality. Second, patient education should provide EPA's air quality index daily and its available sources. It's now widely available through a variety of media. And third, on the basis of the forecasted AQI, prudent recommendations for reducing exposure and limiting activity should be provided based on the patient's level of risk. In this next slide, yet such education is not occurring. In one published study, 43% of cardiology patients who appeared in a clinic were aware that PM might affect their heart health, yet only 8% acknowledged that their doctor discussed this with them. We already know that heart disease awareness campaigns, such as those that are listed here, will have a positive impact on health literacy and health and heart health. Educational campaigns such as Go Red for Women, Women's Heart, The Heart Truth, have communicated the risk of heart disease and have improved heart-healthy behaviors, yet these programs generally lack any environmental health message. Based on the epidemiologic data and the recommendations of the American Heart Association's expert panel, we have an opportunity as a medical and public health community to promote individual and public health strategies through targeted environmental health messaging to high-risk clinical groups. Increasing communication and education and improving environmental health literacy among those at high risk has the potential to contribute to a national effort to improve cardiovascular health and decrease cardiovascular events. The Air Quality Index is an easy-to-use tool provided by the EPA to help guide at-risk individuals to reduce their exposure. The Air Quality Index provides a cautionary health statement for sensitive groups to guide behavior and to limit exposure. For particle pollution, the sensitive groups include people with heart or lung disease and older adults who are more likely to have these conditions. The AirNow forecasts, AirNow, which is a website provided by the EPA, forecasts provide AQI for over 400 cities now, and the AQI is disseminated to national and local media. And it's available from EnviroFlash, which is a mobile phone app. So how can public health officials, health care providers, educators, and the public impact in a positive way the adverse effects of air pollution at the individuals who are at high risk? This slide shows the clinical recommendations of the American Heart Association expert panel. As in all patients with ischemic heart disease or those at risk for vascular disease, the initial focus must be on prevention and treatment of traditional cardiovascular risk factors and the underlying disease. You notice I didn't say avoid air pollution. You have to treat what we know really works. Yet the goal of the environmental health message is to reduce optional or unnecessary exposures and to reduce overall exposure. While it's important to acknowledge that the recommendations of the AHA panel have not been clinically tested or proven to decrease mortality, they are both feasible and prudent for those at high risk. These recommendations include eliminating or reducing non-mandatory travel to highly polluted regions and avoiding exposures or outdoor activities during highly polluted times, for example, rush hours, or in proximity to major sources of pollution. Exposure to particles can be reduced through planning activities. Plan strenuous activity when particle levels are forecast to be lower. Reduce the amount of time spent at vigorous activities. Choose less strenuous activity, for example, going for a walk instead of a run. Avoid occupational and indoor sources of PM along with secondhand smoke. Patients can also be instructed to exercise indoors with the windows closed. Using efficient air conditioning and filtering systems may be prudent for certain high-risk patients, particularly during peak pollution periods. Central air conditioners are known to reduce indoor exposure levels to PM from outdoor sources. If travel or commutes cannot be avoided, then maintaining an optimal car filtering system may work, or driving with the windows closed and recycling the indoor air might help to reduce PM exposure. The EPA recently partnered with the American Heart Association and the American College of Cardiology and produced a two-page flyer that promotes some of the key recommendations of the AHA panel. This can be downloaded from the AirNow website. A wildfire in eastern North Carolina in the summer of 2011 shows how forecasting might be used to provide advance notice of anticipated high exposures. Notification of people at high risk will allow them opportunity to limit exposure in a way they judge most appropriate for their specific circumstance. And this is a CMAQ model of a wildfire in eastern North Carolina, which was provided the day before the anticipated, and you can see the anticipated distribution. So someone living in that purple or red area could take advanced action on limiting their exposures. So in summary, despite 30 years of improvement, cardiovascular disease remains a significant public health problem in the U.S. Awareness campaigns have educated people about the risks of heart disease, yet many are still not aware of those risks, or alternatively, they don't take action to reduce those risks. But even fewer are aware of environmental triggers that can harm those living with some form of cardiovascular disease, advanced lung disease, and possibly diabetes. Healthcare professionals and public health officials should consider improving environmental health education and communication with the goal of lowering short-term cardiovascular risk. A simple environmental health message utilizing the AQI to limit exposure could be included as part of several things in clinical medicine. Part of general preventive care of high-risk individuals. It could be included in discharge instructions when leaving the hospital after a cardiovascular event or a heart failure exacerbation. And also, as I mentioned in that previous slide, it could be used for forecasting notification of high-risk individuals in advance of anticipated high pollution days. Several studies now show that personal actions taken to limit exposure to air particle pollution can attenuate both biological and physiologic responses to particulate matter. More information is needed to define biological responses. In the future, studies are needed to establish whether readily available air pollution and quality information can translate into fewer cardiovascular events at the population level. In the meantime, these simple and practical recommendations seem prudent. Thank you.